Yeah. Yeah, when he was around.
I like to think so.
Chuck Berry was frequently on the radio, right?
Oh, always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But like, there weren't that many guitars. And people, they do like, and then the whole thing. Then just kind of doodly, you know, their own thing to, you know, to, how can I put this gently, slop through the rest of it?
Yeah.
We had it right.
How'd you guys get that job in the first place?
Don, I think you booked the gig?
I did a bunch of gigs. I was on the phone all the time.
Yeah. I remember we played at, was it your old high school?
Yeah.
The night that Kennedy got killed, remember?
I have that poster.
That was at my brother's high school.
Oh, all right.
Brooklyn Center.
That was one of our earlier gigs.
Yep. That was in Brooklyn Center.
In fact, I have that poster around. I'll have to show you.
Yeah.
So who's doing most of the lead vocals when the band starts out?
Wow. Jimmy.
That was only because Russell joined the Army and I was left with the pocket. I was the guitar player and I also had to sing.
So Russ originally was doing the lead vocals.
He was doing the vocals, yeah.
So the band starts playing around town at this point?
Yeah, we did the Camden Bank scene. And
yeah.
Where was the Camden Bank?
42nd and Lindale.
And Lindale.
North.
Right. Yeah, they would
overhead,
be
right on the corner.
They would
second
be in
floor,
Camden.
Yeah. Long, it was in Camden. Long steps, I remember.
Long steps.
Because the bank must have had 18, 20-foot ceilings. It was a long haul up to that dance
they
floor.
They wouldn't let us play foot stomp and knock the plaster off those ceilings.
We caved the floor in at Dance Sound Excelsior playing foot stomp.
Yeah, right. But so did every other band in the world.
We were watching out there. All of a sudden, all there was dust.
So give me some song titles in this very early lineup of the Underbeats.
Chuck Berry's catalog, Buddy Holly.
Yeah. Some Everly Brothers.
Yeah. It was.
Did a mix, eclectic. Did a Peggy Lee Fever. Did.
We did.
Howlin' Wolf.
We did George on my mind. We learned Howlin' Wolf
at your house.
Yeah.
And we were doing these songs that nobody else played. I always thought that was a good idea to find these songs that needed another chance. You know, great songs that people didn't really notice, album cuts and stuff like that. And they always worked out really good for us. And we became popular because of that.
So you were doing songs other local bands were not doing.
We're not doing it. All of a sudden, they all started doing our songs.
Filling the void.
And that used to anger the hell out of me, but I learned to live.
Tony Glover thought it was unfair that we were doing blues songs.
Tony Glover? Was a DJ?
He showed up one day after Jim went in the Army. He said, you know, that's not fair. You guys are playing rock and roll, and those are blues songs. I said, what, are you a blues cop? He loved the band, but he just didn't think it was right that we were billed as a rock and roll band. We were playing Howlin' Wolf, Bo Diddley, Muddy Waters tunes. As long as the other Chuck Berry stuff, I say, hey, man, the songs just speak for themselves. That's it.
Tell me some other local hot spots around town where you guys
Mr. Lucky's,
play.
Safari Club,
Chubbs.
Yeah, I think this was like the peak of the teen dancing now. 63, 4, 5.
Ryan's Bass Lake Ballroom. Ballroom.
But the place has just exploded.
We were turning down more jobs than we were taking.
We had some weeks in the summer we used to do at that Quonset-shaped place. The ammonia plant.
Sleep's Little City.
Sleep's Little City.
We'd play there in the afternoon. That on a Sunday afternoon,
yeah.
Then we drive down to Mankato
and
play at the Cato Ballroom on Sunday night.
9 gigs a week.
That's where we ran into the Everly Brothers a few times.
Yeah. Then we did a gig in Hatfield. I'll never forget Hatfield. We rolled into town in the afternoon, late afternoon. Living thing in town was a dog in the middle of the street, and the dog wouldn't move. He's sitting there in the street, and we're going, what do we do now? To go around? So we went around him. There's nobody around. We set up. We go, this is going to be a...
Did anybody show up? It was packed. They came in from miles around.
We played a bunch of places in Wisconsin. Remember
Hatfield.
Luck, Wisconsin, up in that area.
Woodley's Country Dam.
Woodley's. And then all over the north part of the state.
Yeah.
Donnie, you're booking all these gigs?
At that time was. Then Rod took over for a while.
Well, no, but actually Bill Deal was booking.
Bill Deal. It was me, then Rod, then Bill Deal.
Didn't we book with Marsh, too?
David Anthony, if he was lucky, we gave Marsh. David Anthony was our main booker. He's the guy that got us going. He got our first gig in Fairmont.
St. Michael's.
Fairmont. Way down south. And we drove forever to get there. And he had this Thunderbird.
It was a blue note.
He impressed the hell out of these people. He'd pull up in that new Thunderbird. It was a Cranberry 61.
It had power steering.
Torpedo. That thing could do over 100.
It had power steering.
I know it did.
And it had air conditioning. Yeah,
you're talking about David Anthony's car.
Yes, yeah. Dave Walker is Dave Walker. Was his name.
That's his real name.
David Anthony Productions. We still see David.
He's a buddy of mine.
The guy that got us all these. He got the Underbeats going.
Yeah,
Dave.
Because he was doing the Trashmen at the same time.
Yeah.
And then it all kind of like everything just started to snowball.
Yeah.
And it's like
us and the Trashmen,
we turned down more gigs.
I mean, I see Tony, once a week still to this day.
I remember playing down along the river at Winona, or was it, they have the Oktoberfest?
Oh, Lacrosse.
Yeah. That was our first concert, remember? We didn't play for dance, we played in a football field, and it was a concert to the stadium, middle of the afternoon, after we'd ridden in the parade.
Where was that? I don't recall.
That was in Lacrosse.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. I remember we played
a parade, riding in a parade.
We rode in the parade, and then we played a concert in this football field.
Riding in a parade. Yeah, you have no idea what that's like until you ridden in a parade with a guitar.
Yeah. It's not plugged in.
Or a set of drums.
Yeah.
So the band's got a lot of gigs at this point, and you're being booked by David Anthony and Central Booking and Marsh.
We never signed with anybody. We were so lucky.
We never signed.
I would have signed anything with would have been David Anthony, but I don't think he ever asked us.
No, he got out of the business and he didn't care. Bill Deal never asked us to sign.
We just told him, well, you want to use our, you can go ahead and book us, but we're not going to sign with you, but you can use our name on your roster.
Actually, they'd call me at the beginning of the month, all the booking agencies, and say, which dates have you got? And I'd tell them, I mean, this is all snowballing. We didn't plan none of this, and say, okay, Marsh, I can give you two dates this month. Central has got these, and Dave Anthony's got this. And they were just like, okay, all right, right. Like I said, we were doing 9 gigs a week.
We never had band meetings.
No.
Marsh was more of a, most of the gigs that he did, he was actually running the dance, remember?
Yeah,
he was a promoter.
Right.
Promoter. He was fine. To me, Marsh was as good as any of them.
Oh, yeah, Marsh was up
there. He was just that he would tan his face.
He spent all his days tanning.
Right.
When that fake stuff came out.
If you wanted to meet Marsh, you went down to Lake Calhoun. You were always walking around the lake.
And walking around with a tan thing.
I went to high school with Marsh. He was like that in high school.
He's a nice guy. I always got along with Marsh good.
Did the band have a band vehicle at this point?
Yeah.
No, we had a Chevy Greenbrier.
There's a picture of it here around here somewhere.
It was in the city, and it was a deluxe model.
What year?
63 or 64.
I think it was 64. 63 or 64.
It was the first
Corvair.
Year we had the Greenbrier. Yeah. It was... Problem with that is they had a fan belt. One fan belt wrapped around everything.
Yeah.
And this was a new thing. And we got up someplace way the hell up north, and we blew a fan belt. And this guy looked in the motor and goes, "No, what the hell kind of dang deal is this now?"
He didn't know what it was.
We did actually get out of there that day. We had to get to the gig.
Yeah.
But they had to drive down to some other city to get one of them.
Really?
We had that thing decorated. Remember, B Sharp played?
Yeah.
B Sharp paid for us to have Underbeats, and it was Thumper. That was the name of the van was Thumper.
My car was Thumper.
What was the rabbit on the side?
Yeah,
with the
that
big
was my
foot?
Car.
We that had that in a van, too.
I think maybe we did. Painted down by the wheel well.
Did you?
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's we did.
There's a picture of that van by
Denny's got it here.
It was brown, wasn't it?
I think it is Thumper. It wasn't brown. It was a metallic.
Well, it was a metallic
copper,
brown.
Metallic.
Yeah.
Copper.
Yeah.
So you had the name of the band on the side?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, big. Oh, yeah.
Plus B Sharp music?
Human
little print.
Yeah.
It was Bust Me van going down the road,
Yeah. Remember we came back from Nisswa one night and snowing so bad we couldn't see the road? You were driving, Donnie.
Yep.
So bad. I mean, we couldn't see the road.
They still remember us up in Nisswa.
Oh, yeah.
The Purple Peanut and the Blazer.
Yeah.
We played both those gigs, and they still remember that.
Tell you one thing I remember.
That stuff.
We get, on the way to gigs, we get like boxes of popcorn. We stop off at different places. And what we do, we tear up the box to little tiny pieces, and then we'd open a window wing, and we just let all the little pieces fly around inside.
Didn't take
van.
Much.
That was the least of what
we used to think that was so funny. Another thing, in one gig... Oh, it was way the hell up north. And Rod got his dad to let us take his...
That was Duluth. We were playing in Duluth.
Was that a 58 or 59 Oldsmobile?
Yeah, 59.
With a trailer. A nice camper little trailer.
Camper trailer, yeah.
An old guy. And we I remember stopping at this one gas station way up there. It was a Frank Lloyd Wright gas station.
Oh, that's a famous gas station.
But anyway, that car would overheat about every 50 miles. Remember that? Wouldn't
start. I don't remember that.
Yeah, we'd shut it off at a gas station.
We'd pull over and get gas.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lordy.
The heat shield was off the starter.
Oh, that was some good fun.
Yeah.
And then we started taking our guns with us.
Right.
Why?
That was a lot
rifles
of
rifles. We stopped
Wisconsin. We had ass pigs in Wisconsin.
You mind if we go on your property and shoot a little bit? No, go on ahead. Just go over there by the hill so you don't hit anybody. It was wonderful. Yeah.
We had the guns out a few times to get the gear loaded up and get back to the cities.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's not good. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Mm.
Okay,
let's not get to Chicago anyway.
At some point, you connect with George Garrett here. How does that come about?
Oh, boy.
Through the Trashman and David
Through
Anthony.
Through the Trash, yeah.
They were recording for George.
And don't forget a guy named Tony Kyrie.
Who was Tony?
Gosh, yeah.
He was a partner with George Garrett. And he's the guy that talked me into writing that awful song, that Annie Do the Dog.
That's a classic, Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm so proud
of it. Do the dog, Annie, do the dog.
So George Garrett approached you guys and said, let's start recording some songs.
Let's go to records, go to K-Bank. They had a four-track music recorder, and Lordy, and you could overdub.
They didn't have a four-track then.
The first one was a two.
They had two stereo machines, and we bumped. Wow. We bounced.
We could overdub, though, couldn't we?
Yeah. But we bounced to do it. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
The first multi-track machine that they had down there was a three-track Ampex, and that came in about 2 years later, three years later.
I remember the knobs were, like, huge.
Yeah.
So you guys go down to K-Bank with George Garrett. Was he there?
Right.
And, yeah.
Yep. And he's paying for the session?
Right.
Yep.
And what's the first songs you record?
Probably cost him $47.
Was it Sweet Words of Love or was it Foot Stomping?
No, it was Route 66 and Foot Stomping.
That was our signature song.
Mm-hmm. And then the Annie Do the... Oh, Lordy.
I want to back up a minute here, ask you guys a question. When the Underbeats were playing early on, did you wear matching outfits like other bands did?
Pretty much.
Right away.
For the first couple of years.
Right away.
But they ran the gamut.
What did you wear?
We went to this place downtown called Kiefer's, and we had these suits specifically made. I don't know who had the idea, but I wanted like a Nehru top with piping, and we chose this color. It was like almost kind of like an army green, kind of like what I'm wearing right now. It was like an army green with black piping, and they tapered down to like 13 and a half or 14 inch cuffs.
Stove pipes. They
were more.
And we had
12 inch.
But they weren't called Beetle boots then. They were just boots. I don't know what they called them.
Italian.
Italian boots. Yeah.
But wait, the pants had it. We had them put a stripe in the pants.
Yeah, the stripe on the pants too. Like
on tuxedo the side. Stripe. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, Shark that actually
yeah. was something the braids
like that now.
Yeah. The braids were
that was first.
That was later. Yeah. That was the second suits.
These are them here. Okay, who came up with the idea for the berets and the goatees?
It might have been Jim.
I didn't have that. Wasn't my idea for the goatee because I could never grow a decent.
He had the berets. I had the goatee.
He had the goatee, but I came up with the berets. But we had
that was the original look.
But we had little gold guitars.
I had a drum. Made. I had a widow drum on mine.
Where do we get those?
See, one of the girls gave them to us. Somebody's wife or somebody's girlfriend gave them to us.
Cool.
So that was prior to the custom-made suits.
That was during it.
Yeah, we wore those with something else.
If you look real close,
wait a minute.
Pictures that I've got like this where we've got these sweaters on with the berets.
Yeah, there's the little things hanging from the beret.
Yeah.
You can see them hanging from our berets right there.
Yeah, we had black berets and then later we had cranberry.
Crimson, yeah, cranberry.
Where'd you get this idea for berets?
I don't know. I got a wild idea and I think I saw Chuck Berry with a beret. In a picture, and I thought, hey, that'd be cool. Nobody does that.
Okay, so you guys get in the studio at K-Bank with George Garrett, and you record Foot Stompin' in Route 66. Had you heard the original version of Foot Stompin' by the Flares?
Oh, of course. I mean,
was it on the radio?
Nope. I got the record from a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We called him, it was Fuzz or Rat?
Rat.
It ended up being Rat. He had a lot of nicknames. Quite a guy. But he also ended up being our security guy.
What was his real name?
Tom Forstick.
So he had a copy of the Flares 45.
He had a lot of cool records. You know that, Tom?
Yeah, he was an audiophile.
And he played it for you, and you thought?
Right away. Why isn't this a hit? I brought the record to the next rehearsal. We learned it, and we made our little version of a hit.
People would go nuts for this.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
How long are you in the studio to do your first 45 with George
Maybe
Harris?
An hour.
An hour?
That? No. An hour to set up, an hour to record, an hour to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
We were out well rehearsed.
You know who the engineer was?
Tom Jung.
Yep.
Let's go over the equipment there again at K-Bank. What type of equipment did K-Bank have at that time?
I think rods.
I think they had Ampex two-tracks back then still.
Two Ampex two-tracks?
Yep, you'd bounce tracks.
But you could overdub.
Yeah.
But I don't recall. Well, I think we overdubbed some of the background on the vocal. But I remember singing it and playing it at the same time.
Because you'd lay down, all the instruments would be on one track, the lead vocal would be on another. Yeah. Then you'd go back through. They'd mix that, bump it to one track of the second stereo machine,
right.
and add another vocal track.
Stereo was an amazing thing. You had the fife on one side and the drum on the next side, and you played them together, and you heard one on each ear. Amazing.
What did George Garrett do during the session? Was he advising you how to play?
He
smoked a cigar and sat in a booth.
And went, yep.
Yeah.
Nope.
George didn't really know anything about music, I don't think. He was just an entrepreneur.
He was more of a businessman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But he was also a fan.
Yeah.
They complained about us getting royalties. We didn't know anything about royalties. It didn't make a damn bit of difference. If it wouldn't have been for George Garrett, none of us guys would have ever even got off
and
the ground.
The local radio
station.
So I say,
God bless the boy. You know, whatever happens.
Back then, you could walk a record into a radio station.
Oh, yeah. We go right down to WDGY, hand on the record, and they play it. Yeah.
Bill Deal?
Yep.
And a number of other guys. Yep.
You'd take an acetate, right?
I
think we might even have gone. Have been that close. But Bill would play it all the time. Yeah. Bill was just
and the guy at KDWB would do the same thing, too.
So Foot Stomping comes out as a record. What happens?
History.
A lot of airplay.
This is 1964.
Yeah.
Tons of airplay, and every time it got played on, it moved up the chart, the price we charged went up.
Mm-hmm. Both on WDGY and KDWB?
Yeah.
KDWB didn't support us as much as WDGY, but
Bill
they had the
Bill Deal was our
because everybody else was playing it.
Foot Stomp was responsible for the Excelsior Danceland caving in.
Tell me that story.
We were playing it, and everybody's stomp.
The Foot Stomp.
And the floor caves in about a 10-foot diameter. It just caves in like a dish, like a saucer, probably a foot and a half in. The pilings had driven into the ground because it's on kind of soft soil. So they call in an inspector.
So we see smoke. Like it's like
the girls scream. The girls scream, and the guys stand back and say, "Yeah, that's cool." Inspector comes in an hour later, and we stop playing. In this time, he crawls underneath the place and looks at it, and we're waiting. And finally, he comes out and says, "Go ahead." And we kept playing.
Tell me about Big Reggie.
Ray Every Callahan. Time we played out there, he would get up on stage with us, and he had to sing Cotton Fields.
And Jim would say, "What key?" And he'd say,
"A, of course."
Well, he'd say, "House key." Remember?
House key. Reggie.
Now, did he do that? Did he do that with every band that played there?
I don't know.
No, I think we were the only ones.
And he would just jump in.
Reggie was an outstanding guy. Reggie was quite a guy. Reggie was an amazing person.
Reggie really liked the local bands. Not all the dance
hall
guys did.
He brought the Stones in town, you know.
Yeah, I know. Right. Did you know he actually recorded a 45 of Cotton Fields?
No,
did he really?
Oh, Lordy.
Okay, so Foot Stomping is a hit, local hit, on the radio stations. Bigger crowds, more money.
Oh, yeah, more money.
It grew and grew and grew.
Listen, back then, when we were taking like 200, I think the max 250 maybe we took a week each.
Oh, I don't think we ever got anywhere close to that.
Salary.
I think we got a couple hundred a week.
I don't know if it was that close. I remember 100 and a quarter.
Yeah, I was driving a Corvette. You were driving a Jaguar, for God's sake. Come on.
I didn't have any expenses except me.
Well, nobody did.
You know how much a Jaguar cost in those days?
Yeah. You know what they are now?
I know. I wish I still had the one I had then.
So anyway, I mean, we were like among the frolicking wealthy.
Yeah.
I mean, with just a couple $100 a week, that was a lot of money back then.
Yeah, it was.
Especially for single guys with no
responsibilities. I was the only married guy.
You were married.
So this kind of elevates you to the level of the Trashmen, who had, they had a national hit.
Yeah. The Trashmen might have already been
they
out
split.
Of here.
They were just ready to almost, I'd say about a year, 6 months to a year after we started getting big, they were gone on the road.
Playing out of town.
Surfing Bird hit big, and they were on the road.
I'd always been friends with Tony, though. I mean, I hung around with Tony.
Those guys were all really nice. They went to my high school.
Great guys.
Okay, so do you have any idea how many copies of Foot Stomping were sold?
800, 900.
950. Nine. Made it to number one, so it could have got 100.
Number one, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Always in the
The top 40 charts were probably a little suspect then in terms
Another thing I wanted to mention, we got to the dance and I think about the floor caving in. I think that happened to the trash man once out there too. Okay. So I don't want to claim to be, you know, we're not the only ones that happened. But I think another time was up at that Camden.